No Direction and Paizo team up to bring you the Gen Con 2018 seminar coverage. No Direction would like to thank our advertising sponsor, the Roll for Combat Starfinder Actual Play Podcast. Listen at rollforcombat.com.
Alrighty. Welcome to Writing for Paizo, Writing for RPGs in general. Happy to take it in any direction. Overall, this is a way to learn what sort of writing opportunities are out there in the RPG industry with Paizo or otherwise. We're happy to talk about how we got started, how you can get started, how we continued our careers to where we are now, and how you can basically take your writing, cartography, and what have you, wherever it is you like. Before we get fully into things, let's go ahead and get some introductions.
Oh, I'll start. I'm Ron Lundin. I am a developer for Paizo, primarily working on the Adventure Path line.
I am Jason Keeley, also a developer, and I'm working on the Starfinder Adventure Path line.
My name is John Compton. I'm the organized play lead developer, not working on either of the Adventure Path lines.
Well, we forgive you.
Yeah, well. I primarily focus on Pathfinder and Starfinder Society scenarios, which are more like 4 to 5 hours each rather than, what, like 300 pages of adventure content each?
Yes. 300 pages of action-packed adventure content.
That's right.
You heard it here first.
And we represent a wide range of different writing possibilities at Paizo and have a lot of experience with even more than that. So I think one of the things that makes the most sense is to talk about how you can get started. Although, as I say that, I realize I don't have a good feel for what the room is looking for necessarily. How many people here are here because they have not necessarily been published a lot or at all, and they want to see about just getting started, period? Awesome. How many people here have one or more things published in the RPG? Or in RPGs, okay. And for you guys, is this like considerably more than one or just started up?
A few.
Cool. Okay, so we probably want to focus mostly on let's get things rolling,
yeah.
And then we'll talk about, okay, you've had your first gig or two, now what? So for that reason, maybe it's important just to, in brief, talk about how each of us got started in RPGs, and then use that to go into some of the many ways that you can use as well.
Sure. I'll go ahead and start. My start actually was in organized play back in the days of the Living Greyhawk campaign. Started writing some of the regional adventures for there and sort of ascended to the vaunted heights of a regional triad member. Which in retrospect, that's the first time I thought of it, that actually was sort of a proto-developer position, mm-hmm. Sort of assigning adventures out and reviewing them. When I got involved with Pathfinder Society, playing that, made a pitch during one of the very early open calls they had for a Pathfinder Society scenario that was picked up. From there, I was doing some Pathfinder Society scenario writing for Paizo. At the same time, I've been doing some other writing. I've done some writing for Cobalt Press and Wizards of the Coast, some other smaller publishers. Started my own third-party publishing press at the time, mostly to fill the gaps between other writing assignments and to focus on what I liked writing the best, which was adventures. So my own third-party publishing company is primarily adventure-focused. Got more and more products specifically from Paizo, turned my time more to them. And then last December, turned my time to them so much that I joined the company as a developer.
Terrific. I went straight for the starting my own third-party publishing thing. It was really small. We did this campaign setting and an adventure for 3-5, just as Paizo was starting Pathfinder at the same time, and Wizards was transferring over to 4th edition. So it was good timing on my part. Published a couple sort of physical copies, and then went mostly to PDFs. And from there, we started making our own game, completely not D20 system and I was basically doing editing and developing and layout and writing for all that for several years while I kept my day job and started getting then started putting feelers out for other things. Some for Paizo and some for I've written an adventure for Cubicle 7. Started looking when I saw that there was a position opening at Paizo. Applied, didn't get it, but I got contact information from people to start doing freelance, some freelance editing and some freelance writing. And eventually got hired as an editor. And from there, just sort of since I was in the same building as people, I went like, hey, I want to write something. Can I write something? And just sort of generally poking everybody and trying to write just about everything I possibly could in terms of like diversity of a monster, a back matter article, some of the fiction when it was in APs, all that stuff. And then got sort of moved over to being a developer, and yeah, that's where I am now, giving out the stuff that I used to bug people for.
I got started entirely in organized play. I loved RPGs growing up, but I never considered it as a possible career path. I never considered it as something that you could even necessarily write for. It was sort of a sacrosanct barrier between me and the vaunted authors. And so I started doing organized play. I started organizing game days in the Northern Georgia region, and basically just kept pushing, and eventually one of the venture captain in the area, Mike Brock, got hired on as the campaign coordinator, and I just did all these different volunteer assignments or projects with him to make the campaign better and better. So eventually I got pulled aside by Mark Moreland, one of the then developers, and at PaizoCon, my first PaizoCon. And he was like, we need to talk. I was like, oh gosh, I'm in trouble. I've done something. I've been... and he offered me my first scenario gig. And by about the time that I was turning that in... Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it was exciting.
I love.
By the time that I was turning that thing in, I got an email from our editor-in-chief saying, hey, we have a part-time developer positioning opening up. Would that be something that interests you? I was like, that sounds pretty cool. I said yes, and then like a week later, it's like, haha, just kidding. It's a full-time developer position. It'd require moving out to Seattle. I was fine with that, too. But a lot of my stuff was just uncredited little volunteer projects and not really any like published material until I was finally at Paizo. So I have kind of a weird career path or path to getting to RPG design. But it does show that there are a wide variety of different ways.
Yeah, none of the three of us have entered the same way, and I think that's actually indicative. We got every other Paizo employee up here, they'd have a very different story to tell each. So
let's talk about some of these ways to get noticed, and this will riff on a couple of things that we've brought up. One of them really is that a great way to start working for Paizo is to work with other people too. Like we were talking about third-party publication, such as in both of your cases, I'm impressed, both starting your own company. I think that's probably a step farther than I might recommend right off the bat.
Sure,
but we can spin up to that one. Let's talk about working with established third party first.
Yes.
Have either of you guys worked with a couple of them?
Yes. Yes. At the beginning, who was it? It was Fat Goblin. I wrote a thing for them, and I started talking to them a lot about writing some more stuff, like, oh, maybe I can get my own, a little bunch of supplements or whatever, in a line. That was right about when I got hired by Paizo, so my free time went nowhere, went away completely. But coming to Paizo, I've done stuff for a little stuff for Rogue Genius, I've done stuff for Everyman Games, I've done stuff for Green Ronin. Since then, so yeah, even when you working full time, you can always also do stuff for third party.
And one of the reasons that I bring up third party as far as like writing for Paizo or just writing in the industry in general is that although there are lots and lots of small publishers out there, a lot of us know each other. A lot of us talk to each other, especially at conventions like this. We make these connections, and when you have gotten yourself published, even on a couple of small articles. With a couple of other folks, you can say, look, I have a bit of a track record. And that has meaning to us because we know that you have gone through this writing process. You've seen a little bit of what's involved. You've already taken those first couple of steps, and that's great.
And if you've got the chops for it, also consider like, third parties need editors as well. Mm-hmm. So if you start with an editing project for them, you can get a feel for what their style is and what the kinds of stuff they like to do, and you can decide whether or not, maybe I'll try writing for it. And a good editor is always appreciated as a writer because it kind of helps the post-writing editing a lot.
We know that through experience that our editors who have then jumped into writing have some of the cleanest turnovers. And as developers, our job is to take any manuscript that is sent in by an author and not only give it its first editorial pass, but really edit for content and look at everything and be like, is this cool? Does this follow the rules? Is this internally consistent? And these are things that editors are oftentimes really good at, and we love them dearly for it. So yeah, editing is awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Myself, I mentioned some of the companies that I've worked for, you know, the Cobalt Press, Legendary Games, WotC, Ulysses Spiel. I do want to emphasize the point about all of us in the industry talking. On more times than I can count, somebody said, oh, I've done some work for, you know, say Legendary Games. I reach out to Jason Nelson there saying, what was this person like? In order to get some initial feedback, right? So when work for third-party products, we should be followed up with, and do your best when you do, because mm-hmm. that's what we're going to be sort of talking to each other about.
Also, those third-party companies oftentimes will send out their own calls for pitches. And this is a big difference between how a bunch of these third-party outfits can operate and how Paizo tends to operate. Is the difference between pitches and writing for hire or writing to an outline that's developed in-house. Paizo tends to have an outline. We know what our upcoming adventure path is. We know what needs to happen in Volume 4. We know that when we do, our martial arts handbook, that we are going to have these styles of things in, and we want you to write an archetype that involves throwing people through walls. When we ask for that archetype and we send it to you, we're not interested in your, oh, but I also have this sumo thing. No, we need the archetype that throws people through walls. And it's very important to us because we already have like the sumo something or other on page 8. Whereas on Paizo.com, there's a dedicated third-party message board or sub-board, and one of the sticky threads in there is this ongoing call for authors. Some of them are, I have an opening for a 2,000-word thing about interesting doors and treasure chests. Okay, great. Some of them are, we're going to do an adventure later that's going to be 8,000 words. Send in a pitch of these criteria. So there's a huge diversity of how these initial assignments can go, and third party is a great way to get started on that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's see. I don't want to linger heavily on it, but do you guys want to bring up a couple of the initial considerations if you do want to start your own company?
Oh, gosh. Figure out, I don't know, have someone who knows business because I didn't do that. my company just recently, actually, we just closed the doors on it, but metaphorically speaking. But, find something if you're going to start something on your own, you know, there's lots of paperwork you'd have to do and to make sure that you're legal and whatnot. But in general, what you want to do is something that you really like doing. Because you're going to be doing this a lot in your spare time. You're going to need to mostly keep that full day job. And you're going to be working nights and weekends. So enjoy doing it. If you've got a setting that you're creating, you know, you best love that setting because you have to put everything into. I mean, you might have some people helping you out, but in general, all these people are going to be doing that thing in their spare time. So, yeah, like it.
Yeah, and like any sort of individual endeavor, putting something like that together, you're going to rely on your, you know, friends, family in order to get stuff done. For myself, my company isn't exactly defunct yet, but when I was doing it,
you'll get there soon.
I'll get
buddy.
There.
You'll get there soon.
as far as setting up the legal paperwork, I mean, I have a law degree, so you know the legal paperwork was something I was very comfortable handling myself. My wife has a PhD in English, and so I was editing all the stuff that I did. My brother was a professional graphic designer for several years, so when I did kind of the layout of what my products were going to look like, the first version I showed to him, he inhaled through his teeth. So I knew, okay, that's got to change. So you're relying on people that, you know, if they share your passion, then that's helpful. But even your family and friends, they have their own skill sets. And there's a lot of hats you need to wear, a lot of skill sets that go into operating your own publishing company. So rely on them.
So it is a big step, but there are lots of people who have done that. And oftentimes they're people who are happy to talk about that experience And even if they can't walk you through step by step, they can point you in the directions or give you a sense of what's going to be involved. All right, so that's third party. Another thing that I've found is that we've grabbed a whole bunch of people from online. People from our message boards, people from our online community, people from our organized play. So I kind of have only two rules about this one. One of them is don't be a dick. Basically, whatever your online presence is or public presence is, that's something that if that's what you're relying on to get noticed, that is part of the reputation that's going to come across to us when you contact us. Mm-hmm. And above that, be awesome. If you're doing cool things for the community, whether you're creating like class guides or whether you're creating cool organizational spreadsheets, whether you're organizing games in the community, what have you, that builds up your own following of sorts. That builds up the people who will recognize your name and say, oh yeah, I know that person. He or she, they do cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even from an organized play perspective, they're the ones who are like, oh yeah, even I or other folks at the company are recognizing these people from our message boards or from our venture officer corps and say, oh, I know that this is a dedicated person who's run a bajillion games.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll give them a try. Got anything?
Similarly, like, you know, there are a lot of actual play podcasts out there.
Oh, yeah.
But, that doesn't mean you can't stand out in a certain way, but if you're doing that and you are basically playing the game that you want to write for, that doesn't hurt at all. Someone might recognize the name and be like, oh, yeah, that person knows what they're doing because they've run countless hours on, you know, camera, so to speak.
And maybe that's a better way to frame this is what are some of the interesting ways that we've been recruiting authors of late? Because mm-hmm. you mentioned actual play podcasts.
Yes.
Have you been
Yes, I have actually, yes. A couple people. And same with Joe Pacini, who was developing the Pathfinder Back Matter before Ron came along, talked to some of the GCP people. And for Starfinder, I've been, two podcasts now, I think. Mm-hmm. Cosmic Crit and Roll for Combat have written some small things for me. Both of the GMs of this podcast, to be mm-hmm. clear. But other people, whether or not they're interested or not, I've sort of put that out there.
But they're going out of their way to further the presence of these particular RPGs through these actual play podcasts. They're gathering their own followings. They are, and they're demonstrating proficiency in what they do because they are on camera and kind of on the line for the rules when people can pop up and say, wait, you didn't run this part right. And they have a good sense of fun. And those are all great things for us.
I think the point that I'd add to that to carry forward with sort of the be aware of your social presence, your professionalism. One of the things I look for with people is how they have responded to any other initial product they've done or been connected to. People that tend to be extraordinarily defensive or quick to go off on screeds about whatever whatever their particular issue is, particularly if it's something that they'd had a hand in writing. They're going to be far too invested on the appearance side to be effective long-term writers. I mean, there's something to be said for having the ability to sort of, you know, create and then let your creation sort of go, and then they stand on their own without you having to, you know, shout down everybody that would say bad things about them. Somebody that's got that kind of tendency makes me a little cautious.
Definitely. I'm sure we'll get probably into this later about not being precious about what you give to a developer, whether it be Paizo or third party. But I don't know if we want to hit that now or we'll come back to it later.
We can come back to
that. We'll come back to it later.
Okay.
One of the other things that is really great for getting noticed and getting started is what you're doing now. You're at a convention. You have the potential to meet with the people you want to be writing for or who you eventually want to have as direct colleagues even. So this is a great opportunity for getting to know not just the three of us, but anybody at Paizo or at any other games company that you want to be writing for, is introducing yourself, giving a quick pitch about who you are and what you do and what you can bring to the table for them. And and then providing them some means of being able to contact you or understand more about what you've done. What are some of the things that you guys look for when you're meeting new people in person, like at conventions or what?
You know, someone who's just open and friendly and doesn't come out of the gate sort of saying stuff like, oh, well, some of that stuff that exists, I could write way better than that. You know, not putting anybody else down, just trying to maybe talk themselves up without being too arrogant about it. Mm-hmm. And is, you know, just seems nice. Just so seem nice. You don't have to be nice. Just seem nice.
Seem nice.
That's my secret.
John, you don't seem nice at all.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait. I mean, you're nice. You're nice.
All of us had a position where we had not yet written anything, mm-hmm. and going up to somebody when you don't have any published credit is hard. But be honest when you have nothing, very little, but you've got some interest, right? When you say, I'm interested in getting into this. I don't have anything in print yet. Do you have any advice for me or something I could do? If you don't have anything for us to look at, it's harder for us to send something your way. Mm-hmm. Possible, harder. But people who are trying to claim more credit for a project they had a very small hand in, I'd rather hear, I had a small hand in it, but I'm looking for something more. You know, people that are at the beginning of their career, be honest, you're at the beginning of your career. That's just fine.
Yeah.
Because we've been there, too.
Everyone starts at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that is certainly nice, having a business card. Because I certainly have very poor face-to-name recognition, and I oftentimes will meet with a lot of people over the course of a four-day convention like this. So having something that I can take away and that has how to contact you, maybe a couple of words about what it is that you, what type of work you want to do, and also it's nice to have a little bit of space for me to write notes of, like the context that I met you in or something that you mentioned that was really cool that could inspire me when I looked at this next week to say, oh yeah, let's hire this person. That's great. And we, of course, are carrying around our business cards as well and are happy to hand those out. Hand those things out like candy, but don't just throw them into a crowd and run
away.
Although Jason could, he brought too many.
I expect to meet everyone who came to this convention and give them a business card. This is even like half of what I brought for some reason.
But this is part of making a connection. This is a way of sort of sealing the deal in that regard. Mm-hmm. It's not just a, oh my gosh, there you go, bye. And we've had some of those as well. Or I have, at least.
Yeah. The old drive-bys.
Well, and a lot of that is born out of nervousness, right?
Yeah.
These people
sure.
are, I'm 6'3", but I don't know that I'm that intimidating, right? But some people, you know, don't
You're
nervous to come
day.
Up to me. And I think that all of us have been in that position before. So if you're new to it, nervous about it, we're going to understand that. That doesn't mean try to run from the conversation with us.
Yeah, and 100%, I guess this is more about us now for a second, but, you know, we're at a convention and we're working here, so we do want to meet people and say hi and maybe have a few words, but we might be in the middle of something, so don't try to over-monopolize our time, because we might have to go on break, and this is the 1 hour we have to get lunch before we get to 2 hours of panels or something like that. So, you know, be friendly and courteous.
One thing that's really inspired me over the past year is finding a couple of really cool prospective writers who have let me know what special skills they have. Like, before coming in as a developer, I was an archaeologist and an educator. So I happen to know how to, like, present ruined cities really well. I tend to think about stratigraphy and building phases when drawing maps. Stuff like that. That can have value in certain contexts. I met somebody recently who said that she had just finished a PhD in Middle Eastern studies. I was like, do you have any sort of like locations in your setting that could be tied into that? And like, do we ever? Oh wow! And so it's great if you say, I want to write feats for you. Okay, that's good information. We do have many people who want to write feats for us. I want to write feats for you, and I. For Starfinder, or I want to write Starfinder stuff for you, and I also have this background in this
molecular biology or something.
Exactly,
like that.
And then we're like, ooh, man, imagine the sort of adjectives that person would put into the flavor test.
Yeah, right?
and it doesn't even have to be anything like super intense, even like some sort of hobby that you have that could be an interesting application, that helps to set you in our memories so that when we are thinking of a project, we think, oh, you would be the fit for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So think about what your personal pitch is, because as Jason mentioned, you know, you might have 20 minutes to make a connection. You might only have about a minute, though. So get across the idea of what you want to accomplish and let us know. How about samples? How do you guys handle samples?
I like getting those. I actually have I have stopped sort of passively accepting writing samples when people send them to me and come to actively saying, hey, can you give me a short example that is representative of your work? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's a piece of a published product. Doesn't necessarily have to be. I'm looking for something that's no more than a couple paragraphs long, because I don't have a lot of time. But also, it is much easier to be wordy than it is to be concise. And so people that can show me a sample that is fairly concise is actually very helpful to me. It doesn't have to be anything that is sort of wholly self-contained either. If you've done a 15 page adventure and you give me sort of one encounter out of the middle of it, I don't need the context around it. That what's there is going to give me a sense of sort of how you, what your voice is like when you write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Examples, good. Everything Ron said is pretty good. If you have to attach something in email, that's also fine. It kind of might be a little give you a tiny bit of edge if you have like a website that has samples on it that I can pick one and download. I go, here are my short stories. Here's my adventures. Here's that, and I can like maybe sell that one looks science fiction. Let me see how they do science fiction or something like that. It was a free journalism type thing called like myclippings.net that I put a bunch of samples on when I was starting to shop myself around, and that seemed to do okay.
Yeah, and even if you're going to point to like a blog or a site where you've put several different things, it can also help to just recommend the one that you would that you think is a representative example. That way I don't have to flip through numerous ones and wonder, did I randomly come across the one that you most care about, or did I come across the one that you did first?
The risk is we randomly come across the one that you did the worst with and judge you based on that.
Yeah, and when sending attachments of a sample, it's really, really nice to like just call out that what you are attaching is a sample from X source. Or what have you, because one of the things that we have to professionally be very careful about is opening attachments of things that could be like pitches or the like, because we just end up deleting pitches because we legally that can just be a nasty little rabbit hole for us to go down.
Deleted unread.
Yes, exactly. So it is not helpful for us to send in like your 40,000 word short summary of a campaign setting that you want to write. No, we will not touch that. We want to get a sample, strictly a sample. Yeah. What about emails? Like, do you guys like respond to every email immediately?
Not immediately, no. That sounded like a leading question. Are you going to say something, Baxter?
Yes.
Wasn't that
yes.
leading witness?
Yes, I respond as quickly as possible. Way faster than Jason Keeley does.
You are a model developer, Ron.
I respond quickly, just not right away. No, I try. You want to because people are hanging out there in the wind and they want to know if they got it or if you got it or what have you. So I try to respond as quick as I can, but don't be too impatient if it's not the same afternoon. If it takes a day or two, that's when we're very busy, and sometimes things kind of slip.
We're on vacation.
We're on vacation. Yeah. If a week does pass and you haven't gotten a response, it might be worth sort of sending a friendly follow up, just to make sure that we are not on vacation, or it just we got super busy and there were 800 meetings and I never got it and it just fell into my inbox hole. Do you have anything you want to...
I will tell you that the response that I most often give to requests for that is, great, glad to hear from you. I'm not assigning anything right now, but we'll keep you in mind. And then I've got a folder where I sort of file all these things based on sort of who the prospective authors, kind of what they do, what they're looking for. And then when I do get back to assigning, it's to call those up. And I'll find sometimes that I'm responding to an email that's several weeks, maybe even a couple of months old, where I'll start, hey, if you're still interested, I'm now assigning something that is, you know, nautical theme, just like you'd talked about, you know, when we met at Gen Con, you said you'd spent, you know, 3 years at sea. So that kind of scope of communication that comes for me.
I tend to find that I work in major overtime cycles where there will be a week or numerous where answering any emails that are not part of what my major deadline is right now just have to sort of get filed away for a time. So I find that, giving a little bit of understanding that your email may have hit at a not opportune time, but we'll get back to it, can be helpful, at least for me. But that reminder that you guys were talking about a little bit later on, that's good. I would also bring up that when you're approaching some of these groups, do your research. Like if you're going to approach us about something, what do we write? What does Paizo publish? Well, we sure do adventure paths. We do these. We work on the D20 system.
Yeah.
We have our own campaign settings. So go to the publishers with either your pitches or your desires, knowing what it is they already work on and how you can fit into that model. If you approach us, for example, right now with wanting to write a whole bunch of fiction or novels, right now the Pathfinder Tales line is on a bit of a hiatus, so we don't really have an outlet for that. We can tell you that, but if that's side of your, I want to write for Paizo and this is exactly it, our response would be, we can't really accommodate at that time. Going to us and saying, oh wow, I really hope that Paizo will publish this new campaign setting that I have in mind, isn't really something that we would do. However, a different company might be really excited about it, no less.
But then knowing our system, saying, look, I really like writing sort of Northern Barbarian themes that might fit well into your Land of the Lindorm Kings, Realm of the Mammoth Lords, or the like. I mean, that's really impressive. That shows that somebody's done their research into sort of the setting.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I think we've covered a lot of different ways of getting noticed. I'm inclined to kind of go into, okay, you've got your first gig, or you've done your first gig. But I feel it's also worthwhile to note that although we're happy to sit up here and talk about all this stuff, this is also an opportunity for you to ask some questions. So maybe we'll sort of go through a couple of topics, take a couple of questions, and
a little bit
back and forth. So are there any preliminary questions based on the how to get noticed, how to get your name out there, and the like? Yes.
When you ask for samples, are you basically always asking for something with mechanics in it, or do you ever look for something that's just prose?
So the question is, for samples, are you looking for specifically for mechanics, or could it be prose?
We have articles, we have things. I particularly in the Starfinder Adventure Path have a page in the back of every Adventure Path that is a description of a weird new planet that has no mechanics in it whatsoever, except for making sure that the mass of the planet is equal to the or comparable to the gravity that you've set. But that's a different story.
Except for some high level physics, there's a name.
Very advanced research.
Or just saying, or just having something in their description that says, oh, it's because magic. That's why the gravity so high. But if that's something if that's the thing that you're interested in writing, you letting us know that, and then here's my sample, which shows that I can write more of this prose, will put you in mind for, I've got this going coming up. I've got to do six of these, 12 of them. We've got to do 12 of them a year. So, you know, it's not, I would say no, it doesn't have to be mechanics unless that's what you want to write.
I think it depends also on what sort of connection did you build when you've communicated with that person so far. Did you tell them, I want to write campaign setting material and less mechanics? Then they know to expect that. Cool. That's totally fine.
Yeah, I don't care one way or the other. but the example is another opportunity to show activity over intention. Through you, if you're kind of taking stock of the steps here, right? Get your name out there to other third parties. Come talk to us. I mean, attend something like this. We'll ask for sample. Get something back to us. Many people I have a little intent to do game writing. But then, you know, real life gets in the way or whatever. Then you never come through with it, right? The fact that you've decided to spend your valuable time at an awesome convention like GenCon here, that demonstrates a point of intent, or it demonstrates your intent. It's an activity that you've taken. The writing sample is another example of that. If I ask somebody for a writing sample and they, you know, can't ever maybe settle on whether what to send me and then just don't ever send, I mean, they drop right off of the activity list. So for me, it's, you know, the fact that you've sent something that I can look at, even before I look at it, is valuable, and then could be even more valuable once I look at it.
Any other questions for the moment?
Oh, yes.
For like kind of, you know, just publishing your own stuff, just kind of putting it out there, like, what would you recommend, even if it's just like, besides just going to someone else, of like having a website or a blog or what have you?
So are you asking specifically about polishing your work or about publishing
publishing?
Okay. So what are some of the other ways of getting your work out there or publishing your work beyond just a website? Is that an accurate summation?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're doing something that is actually like a RPG product or an RPG-related product and have laid it out and have maybe some art and whatnot, make it look like your own product, whether or not you've necessarily... This might get impartial legal if whether or not you have are incorporated or whatever. You know, like DriveThruRPG has... It costs nothing, I think, to kind of just basically put your stuff on there as a PDF on their website.
Yeah.
And basically, you just have to have at least some kind of. You're not going to make so much money the government's going to come after you, but you probably should do a little something that if you have your own company in that sense. But, you know, and they take some money off from the sales, but that is something, or you can put it out there for free a lot of times too. So it's not just something you download from someone's website, it's you're downloading it from a store. And it kind of gives you a little air of.
Yeah, we've done. I may have made as many as dozens of dollars on some
yes.
of those. There are actually several store websites like that. I mean, D20 RPF SRD has a store connected with it. And a lot of those places, it's free to put something up and then put a price on that is, frankly, if you're trying to get out there, kind of low, just to encourage people to go get it. Work up on social media. Hey, I got this thing, and here's the link.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, just kind of peripheral to what you're asking, something that I didn't mention is sort of informal writing guilds. There are a bunch of different groups that have formed. WereCabbages was one from a decade or so ago and still continues to this day. Mm-hmm. Freelance Forge is one that started about 4 years ago that does a lot of Pathfinder work. But these are basically communities of authors for certain types of work, in this case RPGs, that will regularly chat about ideas that they have or do a little bit of reviewing of each other's manuscripts as they're going, but doing so in a circumspect way that's, you know, not like violating any NDAs or confidence or anything like that, to help basically edit each other's work and improve as a whole, as well as even pass along recommendations. Like, we might approach one of our authors and say, hey, we would like you to write this. Are you available? And they might say no. But if you're not already familiar with them, might also recommend a couple of these folks. And maybe we wanted specifically you and don't want to settle for anybody else and we'll delay the project, whatever it happens to be. But having those options can be an interesting way of making connections. So the question is about recommendations for getting started in editing.
Like if you have no experience.
No experience in editing at all. Or
young and just starting out.
So do you have like training, I guess, do you have an English degree, I guess, would be okay.
I'm not even 20, so.
Fair enough. the same as you would do for writing RPGs. You read a bunch of RPGs. Reading stuff, always good to learn grammar and syntax. Feel free to, you know, find a book that is, I mean, you can't read the Chicago Manual of Style, but there are books on editing out there that you could read. But familiarize yourself with books like the Chicago Manual of Style, which is what we follow at Paizo, so you know that, you know, when to split an infinitive. Don't. And, you know, where to put commas and stuff like that.
Also don't.
Put commas. We want commas. So once at that point, you know, you'll have the chops that you can go and start nibbling away at the third party publishers and say, like, oh, writing work. Start with something small always, you know, and then work your way up from there, I would say.
And even just in the very much getting started perspective, just as we look to people and we say, okay, even if you haven't written RPGs in particular, do you have some writing samples as a whole? Any sort of editing experience you can build up, even if it's not, you know, in somebody's credits page or the like, whether it is helping to edit your friend's assignments or something like that, working at a writing center in a university, things like that, those are all different proofreading, editing style tasks that build up your resume. So when you first do reach out and want to say, I want to work as an editor for this sort of project, you can say, I at least have this experience going in.
I started editing and creating logic puzzles and crossword puzzles. So, you can kind of edit nearly anything and get into, move it to the position you want to. I think we have a Twitch question.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a question from Half-Baked Rogue. What is going to be the biggest change for someone used to classic narrative writing who have trying to write for RPGs?
So the biggest challenge going from classic narrative writing to writing RPGs. I know I have some thoughts, but do you guys want to start off?
It's very technical. I have to say that my training as a lawyer is probably the best training to write RPGs, because it's very, very technical and sort of if this happens, then that, and you know, there are many fewer indemnification provisions in an RPG adventure.
Yeah.
So often.
Just wait.
But the same sort of thing, the different sections relate back to each other in a very technical way. That seems to be a skill that the narrative writers who are used to some sort of like a story flow, which is also important, might not have the background or training to do. That'd be, I think, the big difference, technical aspect.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, narrative writing, you have a story in mind. You have in mind what the characters are doing, what the characters will say. It's not a matter of possibility. It's a matter of design. What you say is, as a novel writer. When you're writing adventures, you have to consider that there are choices. You need to make the choices matter, and you need to think about what the transitions are from one scene to another that allow the people who don't see the grand design to nonetheless play into the grand design. So many times I have, like, authors, or I read adventures or what have you, where it's, okay, we are in point A, and eventually you should go to point B and do the thing. But point A doesn't have enough clues to really lead to point B. Or point A assumes that they will find the clue. Oh, they will never find the clue. You want to make sure that you're providing enough possibilities to make sure that your adventure, or what have you, will continue even if it doesn't play out exactly as it would in, you know, your novelization of it.
Yeah. And writing setting stuff is different from narrative structure in that it doesn't have a narrative per se. You might be writing a history, and that is, again, sort of ends up being a little more technical than narrative, or here are descriptions of places. Where those narrative chops can come into play is when you write in the tiny story hooks into places and say, leave things sort of dangling. Like, what the most fun I have is writing the beginnings of novels. I can write first sentences like the Dickens. That's about, you know, that grab you and hook you in. But getting those sorts of chops is fun for writing setting material.
Did you also restrain a Dickens joke when he said that he could write the first sentence? Because I did. I looked like you did.
What I meant by that is I get paid by the word.
It was the best of manuscripts.
It was the worst of manuscripts.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Just for the young person who asked about becoming an editor, I'm an editor, and if you want to talk about it a little bit after the panel, I'm happy to do so.
Well, awesome.
And in general, we also have a little bit of time afterwards. Yep. So we'll be hanging out outside, making room for the next panel that will come in just a little while. Mm-hmm. So if you want to chat about what it is that you want to be writing or where you see yourself going, or just general advice, we'd be happy to help out. And we'll also be down in the Paizo booth, mm-hmm. along with many, many, many of our colleagues who we can also help direct you to and can provide advice. So these conventions, always feel free to reach out and start a conversation. And as we were talking about maybe 20, 30 minutes ago, know how to get across the main idea of what you want to accomplish in that conversation. Mm-hmm. Sounds like we have about 5 minutes left, so we can certainly just use that time taking some more questions if you have them. Otherwise, we can talk about, all right, you had your first, or you're partway through your first gig or have finished it, now what? So are there any other questions to hit? Yes.
So you guys have mentioned drive-through. Do you ever find, do you guys ever, surf is probably not right, but use that as a tool to, locate or groom talent at all? Or is that kind of, you're looking for people, they use those sites, they're pulling somebody from that and presenting it to you in another forum.
So the question is, do we ever use Drive-Thru RPG, or I'll add on to this, or other publications or venues to scope out new authors? Mm-hmm. I add in that bit largely because I'd like to call attention to publications like Wayfinder, which is a Pathfinder-focused fan magazine, basically. It's freely distributed, and they now do it once per year. They used to do it twice per year, where they will basically say, this is going to be the broad theme of this next issue. We are soliciting pitches for the following categories. And you won't get paid for it or anything like that. It's an opportunity for you to write a page, as many as maybe even 4 pages of material. And one of the things that's true for a lot of us is that by the time one of our books comes out, we have already spent weeks working on it and are no longer surprised by the contents. Whereas Wayfinder is one of those rare opportunities where we can read stuff about our own setting that we had no idea was coming. it is a chance to bring us back to the fandom that got us into this in the first place. So definitely check out them. That's one of the places I look.
Yeah, same. And if that, if you get your thing in Wayfinder, having that be your sample is definitely
great idea.
Great
idea.
Good.
Although I think the question might be, do we look at those?
Do we scroll through those?
Yeah. I don't define things. I mean, I've got more interested people than I have projects to do. And so while it is helpful for me to have somebody come up and say, hey, I'm published on DriveThruRPG, I'm published in Wayfinder, I've never yet found myself at a position where I'm like, well, I need somebody, you don't have anybody, maybe I will look through Wayfinder and see what's good.
But you're not going to get discovered. You've got to still have to find us out and let us know who you are.
Or there is the possibility that other folks will find out who you are, and then by word of mouth, we will. And they'll be like, hey, did you see that thing on DriveThruRPG? And we're like, no, I didn't, but could you give us a link? And the more accessible whatever the publication is, the more likely it is that I will scroll through it. So I'm unlikely to, for example, just say, I'm going to throw down $50. Let me buy 10 $5 PDFs and see what's
good. See what's good, yeah.
Because that is both time and money that I'm not necessarily inclined to spend on randomized sampling. So I like to get that nudge. Red shirt, please.
As a fan, you mentioned that Pathfinder Tales is not something that it's on the hiatus right now. Is there anything that, as a fan, I or other people could do to speed that process along to get it out?
Do you own a publishing company?
I do not.
Okay.
The main thing is, there are several different things, but it's an intersection of those, and one of those is making sure that we have the correct partner with which to get those novels out there.
So no?
Not so much.
Short of a publishing.
Well, yeah.
And last question over here. Yes.
What's the legality of creating third-party content but using the InterC campaign setting?
So the question is, what is the legality of creating your own content and using our setting?
Like, I GM a lot. Recently, I was like, hey, why don't I actually try to write this in, like, a professional way? Mm-hmm. And so using the InterC campaign stuff, I've been writing
Yeah, so basically using our setting to create content. Ron, you're probably the best one to pick this one up.
We have two licenses that we have. They're explained far better than I'll be able to do in this setting on our website. The community use policy, that's the one that Wayfinder operates under.
That's, by and large, yes.
Yes. And that allows the use of our setting, but only in a situation where you're not making any money off of it. You cannot charge for that. I've actually independently published under the community use policy myself. If you want to actually charge money, then you cannot use any of our intellectual property, which means not set in the Inner Sea region, which means not using our deities. And most third-party publishing companies, because they want to charge, have that sort of maybe either anonymized setting or have invented their own setting because they can't use Galarian and the elements that are Paizo's intellectual property.
And so that would include things that would be possible would be things like fan fiction, are there some other examples of
community use?
Community use?
Yeah.
Making your own variants to the Pathfinder Adventure card game.
That's true.
I've got tons of those. The Pathfinder Adventure card game, because it's all set in the world and has art that they have. Using community use policy, also the no-profit one, also will let you use art we put up on our blog and things like that, art except maps that we put up on our blog, things like that. Again, the details are in the on the website and the specific licenses, but that's one thing that's what I personally used it for.
And when you are in the process of charging something that uses Pathfinder, don't forget about that. What is it called now? The OGL.
The OGL.
The OGL.
Yes.
Almost called it the SRD, which
Open
is not.
Open Gaming
that's
License.
That's a different acronym. So that is something you need to know how to use and use properly so you don't end up accidentally breaking the law.
It's the last page. You'll see it in the last page of all of our products.
We
have to use it too,
text,
and
yeah.
You have to carry it forward in an appropriate way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that covers what we can do in this particular panel. But again, we will be outside and happy to talk with all of you guys. And again, you can find us the remainder of the time that the exhibit hall is open down here, or if you catch us elsewhere, as well as tomorrow on Sunday. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right.